Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Once again, have the pleasure of talking with another innovator. This is Ethan Appleby. He's a design thinking practitioner and coach. He's used design thinking to create the last company he founded, Van Gogh, which makes it easy for anyone to select and purchase original art. Ethan, thanks for being with me today.
Chad, it's great to join you. Thanks for having me.
I'm really interested in your company just from a consumer perspective, because of that notion of, you know, frankly, purchasing original art is kind of intimidating for me. So
yeah.
The idea of having a company that helps with this and makes it easy is really appealing. So I'm hoping you'll tell us a little bit more about that later. But first, let's jump into design thinking. You've had a lot of experience in that. Kind of, you know, give us the top level view of that. In a nutshell, what is design thinking about?
Yeah, so design thinking is in a nutshell a process that was created out of Stanford to help give people a structure around innovation. Often this sounds a bit counterintuitive because you think of innovation as, you know, someone leaning back in a big armchair and just coming up with an epiphany of an amazing idea. Mm-hmm. But with design thinking, there's five steps that try and help you really structure your thinking and stepping outside the box to come up with ideas that are new and original.
Okay, so it's an innovation approach built around five steps, and we'll dive into those steps in a moment. How did you first discover it?
I first discovered it actually on a 2020 or a 60 Minutes episode where they...
One of those news shows.
And they were going through the process to actually redesign the shopping cart. And so after watching this, I thought, wow, you know, there's a lot of energy and excitement, and this seemed like a process that could work. And so I did a lot of research and read a lot about it and got more and more intrigued by the power that this could help bring.
Mm-hmm. Was this the one where the IDEO designers had the task of redesigning a shopping cart in a week?
It was, yeah. So IDEO and the D School at Stanford actually were started by two brothers. Mm-hmm. So they worked very close together. But yeah, so they had to redesign the shopping cart experience, and you know, watching them go through and come up with insights that I never had really thought about, as well as frustrations that I had that I didn't think there was a solution to. One was, you know, how you're always, when you're going through the aisle, you know, you bump in, or if you're trying to pass someone who stopped with their cart, it can be, you know, it can almost cause a traffic jam. And so they designed it where you leave your cart at the end and you can take out sort of mini hand baskets and walk down the aisle, mm-hmm. and then bring it back. And so that was one to the other, which I hadn't thought about. Things like theft was a big issue with shopping carts. And so by having these removable baskets, essentially, there was nothing really to steal. So it saved the shopping cart owners a lot of money.
I remember coming across that too, and that video that IDEO did. I thought it was just such a powerful demonstration of a process to go through innovation. And for the everyday innovators listening, if you're not familiar with that, I'll try to find a link on YouTube and post it in the show notes for this. So Ethan, that was your first exposure to this design thinking idea that kind of got you into it.
Yeah.
What was a early experience that you had actually using it?
Yeah, so my first experience with design thinking was I had looked up and found that Stanford actually had a 4-day class that you could go through. And so I actually, using my own sort of funds, with, you know, let my company take time off and went and took this class. And that was where it went from sort of being an academic sort of reading and practice to really understanding the power of design thinking. And so over 4 days, we looked at how to redesign the on-ground experience for JetBlue customers. So wow. Anything that didn't include flying.
So this wasn't a class where you just sat in a room and heard the concepts. You were actually putting them into practice.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, immediately they put you into a two-hour. You go through the whole design thinking process in 2 hours. And so we started off literally there with almost no welcome, and they just got us going. And the, you know, the whole point they were trying to drill home was anyone can do this. You can do this very quickly, and the power of it, even in a kind of 2-hour cycle, can glean a lot of insights.
Okay. So, and you were given a project for JetBlue. Was this a real world project?
It was a real world project. So we went to SFO and to the JetBlue terminal and spent about 4 hours interviewing and talking with customers throughout the entire airport. And so some people focused on the arrival experience, others focused on the check-in experience, and others focused on the waiting experience while you're waiting for your plane.
Okay. And so actually interacting with real people and doing interviews.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my favorite ones was we had found a lady who was traveling, a mother traveling by herself with five children, going through the airport, and you could just tell how stressed she was. And so this was obviously an emotion that was visible. And so we wanted to, you know, talk to her. And we learned, you know, one of her big takeaways was that the airport now is such a destination. There's so many things going on that, you know, her children were running everywhere. And we learned this because we were getting on one of these people movers, you know, where you step on and it stands there and pushes you through the airport. And she lets out this big sigh of relief. And actually, I hadn't seen it initially in the interview, but my co-interviewer, when we got off, said, you know, excuse me, ma'am, I saw that you let off a big breath of relief there. You know, why was that? And it took her a moment because she hadn't even realized that she had done it, which goes to show that sometimes when you're interviewing someone, it's not what they say, or they don't even realize some of the emotions that they're putting or exposing. And so she didn't say to me, oh, I'm really stressed, but she showed it visibly. And so what she said was, with the people mover, I love that when I get on these things, it corrals my children in. You know, they can't run anywhere because there's nowhere to go. And so it's almost like the most relaxing part of the entire experience. So the insight we learned there was like, okay, this experience for mother is really difficult. And are there ways that we can help almost like corral or help her keep her children from running all over the airport?
Yeah. And I'm sure other groups ran into different types of customers to talk to, like the frequent business traveler, and not just the mom that was there or the families that were together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think someone even came up with like an idea for Uber before Uber even started that week.
Wow.
Yeah, which was, you know, the idea of what if you could just press a button and someone would pick you up at your house and take you to the airport, or you know, a lot was around luggage, or how could you get so your luggage could be picked up the night before or something. And so yeah, it was a lot of very different ideas, which again goes to show the power of this and how people had, you know, there were 15 groups all with very different ideas, but who were going through the same, we're all at the same airport, you know, all in the same area, but just by talking to different users, you know, got very different needs out of each one of them. And so for me, it was just like, wow, here shows the power of kind of empathy and understanding it from other people's viewpoints, because, you know, I travel a lot. And so I thought, wow, I have many ideas. You know, I have all these great ideas as to what JetBlue can do before we even started the project. But I learned 10 times more in a 2-hour period than I ever could have come up with on my own.
Yeah, really good example of the power and the importance of talking to actual customers.
Yeah.
And I know when we were talking earlier, you described how you had applied design thinking to the company that you created, Van Gogh, for purchasing art. Walk us through the beginnings of that story, because I thought that was a really interesting story of applying design thinking.
Yeah, sure. So I went to participate in a startup weekend, which is one of these 48-hour hackathons, to help a friend, actually, who had an idea. And at the very last minute, my friend got there and got cold feet and decided that he didn't want to take his idea forward. And so I said, okay, well, I had just moved. So rather, you know, I was going to spend my weekend helping him, but instead I'll get back to moving. And one of the challenges I was having was around finding something original. I didn't want the same IKEA print that all my friends had to hang up on my wall. And so I was in the parking lot and ran into somebody and struck up a conversation explaining this challenge I had and if he had any ideas. And he said, hey, you know, I have this problem too. And so it kind of struck to me, well, hey, you know, in true design thinking fashion, which is, you know, not taking an idea forward, which I think is often what we do. We jump to a solution. But what is a challenge that you can take forward? And so in this case, it was, how do we make original art more accessible? And so took this challenge forward. In a day, interviewed dozens of people.
Okay, sorry, let me just interrupt you for a second. So this is a guy you didn't know that you met in the parking lot.
A guy I don't know.
The two of you decided to go back and compete in the hackathon together?
Yes, facing teams that were, you know, 10 to 15. It was just the two of us. And, you know, again, everyone came with an idea and had solutions that they just started working on. Whereas we spent the whole first day interviewing people.
And who did you interview?
You know, we went out to malls, to the galleries, to IKEA, actually, in the art section of IKEA. So they were strangers. I mean, it was a simple answer. Mm-hmm. But we went to areas that, you know, we thought maybe our target customer would be hanging out. And
what are the questions you asked them?
You know, we asked them everything. You know, really we wanted to get to the emotion. So we started with some basic questions around like, what are you doing here? You know, what are you looking for? Just to kind of get them warmed up. And then, we sort of said, you know, like, you know, why is this important to you? So for example, you know, at IKEA, it was okay. You know, very simply, I'm looking for something to hang on my wall. And, you know, I don't have a lot of time. And so we dug in and said, time, that's interesting. Why is that an issue? And, you know, I think it was the same story. I'm very busy. I'm traveling. I have a lot of things to do. So we said, okay. She said, this is the easiest way to find something. But it was like, you know, something. Well, are you not happy with that? They said, no, you know, because it's so generic. I want my home to really feel personal and like my own. And so I'd rather have something original and unique. And so we just dug in. Why? And so, you know, got to this emotion of how personal a home is and how, you know, people want originality, but for her, it was an intimidation of both price and time was what she was short on. So she found an alternative, which was IKEA wall decor.
Okay. So you're asking questions that really get to the heart of the problem.
The heart of the problem.
And looking for those emotional reactions that really tell you there's a true pain here that's been identified.
Yeah. And I'm sure many of your listeners have probably heard of, you know, the rule of five whys or six whys. You know, it's if you continue to ask why to every answer, by the time you've asked it, you know, usually 3 to 6 times, you really get to the root of what the issue is. And so, you know, that helps, I think, find the emotion or the real need, not just a surface level kind of solution.
Very good. Okay. So what's the outcome of the story then? So you guys did the design thinking questioning as part of the hackathon. How did it end up?
So yeah, it ended up with us winning the event, which was great. We built a prototype of an idea that really tried to solve three needs, which was time. So, you know, we wanted to make a platform that basically had a recommendation engine to help people find art they liked, mm-hmm. that had visualization, because people often said, oh, you know, when I'm out trying to find something, I never know what exactly it's going to look like in my house. So we let them see it on their wall to scale. So it's sort of try before you buy. And then the last is pricing. I think when it comes to original art, pricing is very confusing. There's buyer's remorse. There's a lot of emotions that come out with the confusion around pricing. And so we simplify that, where artists start selling for prices comparable to IKEA. And the more they sell, the more they can sell for.
Hmm. Okay. So you have that merchant exchange where you're identifying artists doing original artwork and then pairing them, matching them with people looking for artwork.
Yeah. It's kind of like match.com for original art.
There you go. So you won the hackathon. So the story, frankly, just cracks me up that you met this random person in the parking lot, shared this idea, decided to go back in together, pitch it, do the design thinking work to really refine what the problem was with real customers, pitch your solution at the end of the hackathon, and you won the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. It is. And it, you know, for me, it was great validation, because it just got to show also, like, this was a weekend, you know, that we came up with this idea and ended up winning. And I think oftentimes I've been part of projects that have lasted months, you know, and it was like we were stuck in something and not really coming up with out of the box ideas. And so it just, for me, it showed the power of what design thinking could do, and took that idea forward. And actually now I'm, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, still with that company running. We've been featured in the front page of the App Store, written up, you know, in many different business and tech articles about kind of disrupting the art industry. And it all began at this weekend with a challenge that we had of how could I find and a piece of original art.
Great story. So the hackathon actually did turn into a real company.
It did.
And I think to contrast it, what I've seen in hackathons often, and I'm curious what you saw at this one you were at, is that my suspicion is most of the teams there were spending their time doing the actual coding, trying to build a solution by the end of the weekend to then pitch their solution, right? And maybe you made an interesting statement earlier where you said, you know, as someone that was looking for original art yourself, let me go back to the airport one you talked about. As a frequent traveler, you knew a lot about what it was like to be in that experience, but you learned so much more from actually talking with people there, like the mom with her kids, right?
Yes.
And the hackathon, I suspect a lot of the teams kind of short-circuited thinking about the actual problem because they had already thought of it in their terms and not with who might be the customers. And you guys spent your time focused on the potential customers.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is absolutely right. And so coming out of that, they got to building immediately. And so they had, you know, slightly more polished sort of prototypes than we did. Ours was very rough. But we spent our time engaging with the customer, learning something new and coming up with some, you know, again, it was something that we hadn't even thought about kind of going into the weekend. And so, it goes to show that the power of engaging with your customers, empathy, and then sort of, you know, rapid prototyping, which we'll talk more about, to come up with something that, even though if it's rough, really can show, you know, the essence of your idea.
Great. So this is a good time to dive into that. You said there were five steps of design thinking. Walk us through those.
Sure. Okay. So the five steps are empathy, definition, ideation, prototype, and testing. You know, starting with empathy. So this is learning about your audience for whom you're designing. You know, really at the core, it's going out and interviewing people and interviewing a variety of people, both maybe related to your idea as well as, you know, I often find it's great. The more perspectives you get, the better. So if you're trying to perhaps solve a problem for who you think that customer is, you know, obviously get people who are your target customer, but also get random people because you'd be surprised maybe some of the things that you learn from them.
Okay.
So empathy is interviewing. It's an interviewing process.
When you went through this at D school, did they give you scripts for interviewing or the types of questions?
Yeah, so they do. And I think, you know, in any process when you're starting this, it's good to brainstorm a couple ideas. I think especially in the beginning, because when you're new at this, sometimes, you know, you're not quite sure what to ask. But the key is actually to not be too scripted and to let the conversation go where the user takes it. And so you might have, you know, four or five questions to start. So, you know, let's take my example of, you know, the airport when we were there. You know, we would just start off with very simple questions. You know, where are you going today? You know, why are you here? You know, what time is your flight? And through these, we would then get, you know, I'm going to, you know, to visit my mom, or I'm going on a business trip. I do this every single week, you know, and then you follow up. Oh, interesting. Every single week. So, you know, do you have this routine down, or what's the most challenging part of the routine? And so the key is really to kind of follow the conversation and not direct it.
Okay. And I suspect there was probably some warnings given to, not lead the person you're asking questions of, not lead them to a predetermined solution that you're thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, and that's absolutely, and that can be hard, you know, because we all have ideas. And as you go through this, you know, you get excited and you learn something or you think about something. And, you know, we've all done this. We're talking to somebody and in our head, we're running through, you know, oh, wow, what about this? Or talking to yourself. And so it's really just trying to listen and not to lead.
Yep, absolutely. Very good. So step one is empathy, which is all about interviewing prospective customers.
Yeah. And also part of that sometimes is taking pictures. You know, maybe in the airport, we would take a picture of that mother kind of standing there with her five children scattering in different directions. Cause, you know, that can help kind of jog your memory. And so pictures and interviews, okay. You know, you then take all that information back and kind of deconstruct it. So usually in a team, you know, we will go through and just put all of our notes up on sticky, you know, little stickies, just ideas and thoughts and things that we heard, quotes, as sort of a debrief. And, you know, from there you get to see this next step, which is definition, which is constructing a point of view that's based on your user needs and insights. So what I do with my teams when I go through this process is we basically do a debrief to everyone and put all these sort of quotes and ideas and things we heard and things we saw, and then we organize them into needs and insights. So a need is, you know, a need is, it's more the emotion than it is, you know, I need to get to the airport. It's, you know, I need a way to, I need a way to get to the airport without the anxiety or without being anxious about it. So I don't have to worry. And then insight is something, that is surprising. So it could be, you know, in the case of, I always like to give an example of my mother, actually, when I lived far away in Dubai, I would always say, like, I needed a way to show my mom that I was never that far away. And the insight was because I always like to give her, like, personal gifts. So what was a way that I could give her a personal gift still being 10,000 miles away? So it's just something unique that you hear from a user.
Okay. And like the example you gave of interviewing the person in the IKEA store looking for art, the need was, yeah, I just got to get this done quickly, right? I'm trying to save time.
Yeah. And then the insight was, you know, but I really want my home to feel personal.
To be unique.
To be unique. And so that's like, okay, so that's something interesting to hear. So once you have this point of view, and you've defined what the problem is, you then go into ideation. And this is, you know, essentially a brainstorming process. And here, the most important thing is, you know, we always say quality over quantity, but it is quite the opposite. It is quantity over quality, which is just get ideas out there, good, bad. You know, it's important to get as many up there as possible. And furthermore is to build onto other people's ideas. So we use a technique called yes and. So if someone has an idea like, oh, what if we, you know, pick people up in spaceships from their house to take them to the airport so they could skip traffic? You could be like, yes, and that spaceship could have free soda because they like soda, you know? And so it's just building off each other's ideas. So that's the ideation process. And so there, again, come up with as many ideas as possible, because even if you think it's an idea that you're not quite sure about, it might jog somebody else's memory, mm-hmm. some yeah. other idea. And this is the importance. And the worst thing, you know, I know as a manager, I've probably done this before, where you sit in the boardroom and you say, okay, guys, let's come up with some great ideas today. And, you know, that using that word great right there already sets the bar subconsciously so high in people's minds that they're not going to give their ideas, you know, or they're going to be really hesitant. And so, you know, really stressing to your team, guys, let's come up with 100 ideas. It's like, give it a number. Let's come up with 1,000 ideas or 300 ideas. And so it's not, they're not putting that filter of, is this a good idea or is this a bad idea? They're just aimed towards a lot of different ideas.
Good. And I like your approach, the yes and, you know, to just keep building. Pixar talks about their plussing approach. Same idea. You know, it's like, I like that. Let's plus it. Let's add to it.
Right? Let's build upon it.
Yep. So just to make sure I'm clear on the ideation part, this is really brainstorming over what's already been learned. So the same group of people have been through that point of view to understand what the actual problem is, and they've seen some of those insights from the customers. And now you're asking them to generate ideas for solving that problem.
Yes.
Okay.
That's absolutely.
And create as many as possible.
And create as many as possible. And that's just, if I were to give one tip, that would be the biggest key. Is to just come up with as many as possible.
And what kind of time are you talking about to get that done in?
So, you know, I would say we would do sprints. So we would do sometimes 4-minute sprints or 10-minute sprints, and see what we came up with, and then almost build off of that. And Another technique to talk about in ideation actually is how might we? So you give within your point of view, you know, it's, you know, I have a mother traveling with five kids who needs to get through the airport without a stressful experience. And you know, you could say, how might we do that before she gets to the airport? How might we do that while she's waiting to check in? How might we do that in security? So you kind of break down the potential areas and then brainstorm around those. And let me give a more specific example I love is I will ask people, okay, you have 10 seconds to think of something that is white, you know, and go. And people will be scribbling away and thinking, and, you know, some people come up with three ideas. People who are really good maybe come up with six. But then you say, okay, I want you to think of anything that is white that is in your refrigerator. So I've now taken the whole universe that you could pick from something white down to your refrigerator. And people will come up with twice as many ideas because you're kind of limiting and focusing them. And so in ideation, you know, we'll do 10-minute sprints and we'll try and focus that around a specific area or some kind of limiting constraint to help that ideation process.
Okay. And I'm not sure if I'm clear on what the 10-minute sprint actually looks like. Is this collective work together or is it individual and then collective?
So, yeah, it's individual. And then usually I'll say, okay, spend 6 minutes sharing. I'm sorry, 6 minutes brainstorming. And then we'll spend 2 minutes sort of sharing. And then we'll spend like 2 minutes doing a yes and. So people building off of that.
Okay. And then you might do another sprint on another scenario.
Mm-hmm. Or we might take one of the ideas that someone came up with in the initial sprint and say, okay, let's brainstorm further and deeper into this one.
Okay. And is this something you might do over the course of a day, a half day?
I would say this would be 3 to 3 hours.
Okay.
But just constantly using time as a restraint, as one constraint, as well as different scenarios to just to do these really quick iterations and sprints.
Very good. So we get through ideation. We get lots of ideas developed. What comes next?
So next is usually it's selection, right? We have to select one of these ideas that we've come up with. And you know, it really depends on the scope of the project. I mean, sometimes you might take 10 or 15 forward, but let's just say in the case we're going to take one forward. And so you take this idea forward and then you go into prototyping, which is building a representation of one of your ideas to show others. And this is something that is extremely powerful for two reasons. One is when you build something, you actually think about your brain physiologically operates differently, that it will make you think about other things that you hadn't thought about before, say even like in the ideation process where it was just more of a mental exercise. And so you will build something physical and something very rudimentary. And when I do this for the first time, you know, I bring in what looks like, a first grade play set, right? It's got straws and Play-Doh and stickers and paper plates, you know, and I'm bringing this into maybe a group of executives and they're all like looking at me, you know, perplexed. And they're like, really? Like, you know, we just talked about, you know, redesigning the lounge area at the airport. How am I going to do that with this? But, you know, people, you'd be surprised. And at that first, again, iteration, it's almost the thinking process that comes out of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just going to ask new questions. Excuse me.
It's the power of Play-Doh. Right? You can come up with some serious ideas out of Play-Doh.
I like that, the power of Play-Doh. And again, so they'll just think, oh, wow, you know, I'm trying to build this chair that has a PlayStation built into it with Play-Doh. And yeah, I can imagine what it looks like there. Oh, but if we put it there, then, you know, you can't put your drink on top of it. So it's just amazing to watch with some very basic materials, how powerful it can be just from you, your iteration or your brainstorming kind of process. And then furthermore, you then take that prototype and you give it to a user. And this is something that is very funny because, again, you know, you've looked at me, you know, with perplexed and curious when I hand you that Play-Doh. But then when I tell you that you have to give that Play-Doh prototype to, you know, another team or somebody else to show them what you've built, it's a look of horror and like, you have to be kidding me. But, you know, you get that and then they take the prototype and, you know, I often tell people, do not sell. So really explain almost like, you know, Wikipedia factually what it is. You know, this is a new chair that I've designed for the waiting area in a terminal. And then let them just look at it and, you know, observe it and maybe play with it. And then they're going to come up with questions. Mm-hmm. Of course, it isn't perfect, but those questions are going to be things that you hadn't thought about initially. And here starts to just come this amazing process of you know, where you're learning so much more. And so this is the testing period. So it's returning to your original users and group for testing your ideas and feedback. So you built this prototype and now you're showing them and you're getting their feedback. And so again, it's not about perfection here, but it's just a continued learning. And so this is early on. Obviously, if you were to take a product such as, you know, we did from an early prototype into an actual app that's published in the App Store, there's a level of refinement. But, it, you know, that's over the course of perhaps 50 different iterations that get more and more refined each time. The other thing that is not often thought or talked about, you know, when you're going through this design thinking process, but it's the indirect benefit that having a prototype does, which is it removes the academic discussion and debate that might happen or even personalities that you might have where, you know, when you're just in a boardroom going over how you're going to build this idea or this product, you know, and the product manager or someone says, this is how we're going to do it. This is the right way. I know. You know, when you put back your prototype in the hand of the user, they're, you know, they're right. And we often say the customers are right. But you're doing this early on where it allows for the entire team to basically not be able to argue which way is better because they've been seen it sort of in use and heard directly from the users. And so I think it's great for team building and just general collaboration and has an indirect benefit there.
Absolutely. And it overcomes those people that might say, you know, just trust me, I know what the customer needs.
Yeah.
And you really need to know what the customer needs. And you do that by getting their response. So just to separate out those two activities of prototype and testing, prototyping, then having your design team here, you gave the example of the executives maybe doing this work too, of just coming up with some quick rudimentary prototypes that represent some of the ideas out of the brainstorming, and then getting customer interaction. And I think what's so valuable in them being rudimentary, even though some of the executives you work with sounds like they cringe at that thought, is I think customers are much more willing to give feedback on something that looks like it should be changed than something that looks like it's done.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And you engage them better.
That is an excellent point if you give someone a polished product and you do this sell job of, oh my gosh, look how amazing this thing is. And we built it and it's great and it looks shiny, but they don't like it. They're not going to tell you. But if you give them something very rough and they can see that, they're more likely to tell you. And I think as a team, it's almost like you're more willing to accept that feedback. I mean, we all take our, you know, so many people, you're passionate about what you do. And when you work on something, you know, you want it to be great. And it's amazing, again, even in these like rough prototypes, I said why they cringe when I say you have to give this to someone is because they're like, oh, it's not perfect. It's not right. It's not there yet. And maybe they get harsh feedback, but I say, look at this. You just spent, you know, 8 minutes on this or 30 minutes or at the most an hour building this. You know, I mean, only an hour. And think about how much you learned and what you've got back, and kind of it makes it easier for an individual to be receptive to feedback.
Absolutely. And then the testing step, that sounds like that's a series of refinements to the prototypes working towards a real solution that would be launched to the customers.
Yeah. I mean, so this is where, you know, there's no perfect for it. Once you get to testing and you get that feedback from your user, maybe it means you go back to the prototyping, you know, because it was refinement. So mm-hmm. you do another refinement and then you test again. Maybe it means, you know what, we weren't that close. We're kind of off. Let's go back and brainstorm a little bit more, and then we'll prototype, and then we'll test. You know, or maybe you say, wow, we were really off. You know, let's go back and talk to some more users, or let's go redefine the problem. So it can really here, it's definitely, you know, it's circular, and you go back, and it kind of depends at each step which of the previous steps you go back to.
Yeah, so it's not a straight, you know, for developers, that waterfall kind of approach where you do step one, step two, step three, and you're done. This is, you learn all the way, and if you get new information that tells you, gosh, we really don't have a good understanding of what the customer's problem must be, we missed something, then you jump back into that stage, and you do more interviews, and you figure out what's missing, and you carry it forward again.
Exactly.
Very good. So the five steps again: empathy, definition, ideation, prototype, and testing. Right?
You got it.
Okay. Yep. So for people that want to learn more about those steps and design thinking, do you have a resource that you would point us to get started with design thinking?
So I think we'll include a couple on this page. I mean, the 60 minutes video is great to just give you an idea visually and watching this as to what the process kind of looks like and the energy that occurs. There's then two books that I'd recommend. One is called Design Doing, and the other is called Creative Confidence by David Kelly, which talk about the design thinking process. But most importantly, and I think that's how I went through and those were helpful, is to just get started and to try it. And so I'll include a couple attachments and a link that will give you some resources that with your team, you can run a mini design thinking exercise.
Awesome. Those will be good resources. So for the Everyday Innovators listening, when you go to the show notes for this episode on the everydayinnovator.com, you'll find links to those books that Ethan told us about and also other resources available. Very good. So this brings us to the part of the interview that I always like to ask a innovation or success quote and why you chose it, what you love about that.
Good. So the one I always like to use is Henry Ford's, which is, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And obviously he then came up with the car, which was the real need was people want to get from point A to point B faster. And he used that to come up with the car. So apparently it's still in question if he actually said that, but it's a great quote of thinking about, you know, defining the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And solving for that, not just for a predefined solution.
Yeah. And how we frame the problem has so much to do with the answers that we look for.
Yep.
Very good. Thanks for sharing the quote with us. Yeah. For this interview, what makes it a win for you? What do you really want our listeners to know? And also, how can they follow up with you or follow up with your work?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think a win here is that you got a very basic understanding of design thinking and enough interest to want to dive in and discover more. And that you will do the mini exercise that's attached with your team. It's 2 hours, and it really doubles as a great team building exercise as well as a preview for of the design thinking process. So that to me is a win. And as far as following up on me, you can follow me on Twitter at Ethan Appleby, which is ethanappleby. And to see my work, you can go to vangoart.co or download us on the App Store at Vango. That's Vango. To see how I use design thinking to create my current company.
Great, Ethan.
And buy some original art.
Absolutely. And I did check out the company and the app that lets me visualize what the artwork from the original artwork from the artist would look like on my actual walls. I thought that's a brilliant idea.
Thank you very much, Chad.
Very good. Ethan, again, thank you for your time. I appreciate you sharing design thinking with us and learning about how you've applied that to some of your past experiences and now what is a successful company with Vango.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. And Everyday Innovators, thank you so much for listening. The reason why we do these interviews each week is because of you, and I hope that you find them helpful in your thoughts and keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.